Welcome to the Geek Speak Podcast, where we lift the curtain on the world of community banking. I'm your host, Lincoln Parks, and I'm here to tell you there's a lot more to your local bank than meets the eye. For years, I was on the inside as marketing director and chief innovation officer at a community bank. Yes, I saw the spreadsheets, the loan files, but most importantly, I saw the stories. Stories of dreams funded, businesses built, lives changed, all thanks to the power of local banking. This podcast is about peeling back those layers, having honest conversation with the minds behind it all, the bank presidents, the fintech visionaries, and the folks who are shaking up things from the main street to the digital frontier. We'll be pulling up a chair right next to them, asking the questions you might be wondering. The real deal on community banking. What makes it tick? What are its challenges and why you should care? The Geek Speak Podcast isn't just about numbers and algorithms. It's about the heart and soul of community banking, the relationships, the trust, and the shared prosperity. It's about how these local heroes are building a brighter future one small town at a time. So whether you're a business owner, a homeowner, or simply curious about the world of finance, grab your headphones, get comfy, and join us on this journey. Because on the Geek Speak Podcast, we're not just talking about banking. We're talking about building a better future together. Hi, my name is Lincoln Parks, and I want to welcome you to the Geek Speak Podcast with Lincoln James. Today, I have the privilege to interview CEO, former CEO Leonard Moreland of Heritage Bank and Heritage Southeast Bank. Leonard, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Lincoln. Proud to be here.
So, Leonard, I want to jump in real quick. I did mention former CEO of Heritage Bank and Heritage Southeast Bank. So what's keeping you busy now?
Hey, 6-year-old grandson, life is great. I do miss the business, but I'm able to keep myself pretty busy right now.
So if you don't mind me asking, what is it? Is it, I know your grandson's keeping you busy. Anything else you're doing? Basketball, golf? What else are you doing?
Well, my retirement came at 62, and I have a lot of friends that are my age, and so far I'm the first to retire. So golf is occasional, not as often as I had hoped. I am still in contact with a lot of my friends in South Metro Atlanta. So a lot of get-togethers, a lot of lunches, and just spending a lot of time working in the yard, and as I said, with my grandson as much as I can.
Awesome. That's awesome. That's so great that you're able to do that. So Leonard, I wanted to ask you. I know people watching this. I want them to get the feel of who you are as an individual and how you started. And there may be people that even want to know, like, how did you even get to the role of CEO of a bank? You know, a major player, major bank in the Atlanta area. Tell us how that all happened for you.
You know, just the grace of God, I guess. Sometimes being in the right place at the right time. Sometimes everybody else in the line took a step backwards, not that I took a step forward. it was very fortunate. I've been very fortunate my entire career to be surrounded by really talented people like yourself. And those folks, if you give them the room to operate and to make decisions and do things, they feel fulfilled, they perform, and it makes you look good. I've just been the recipient of a lot of hard work by a lot of people, and God's blessed me.
Well, I'll tell you, and just firsthand and talking with you, you have been, instrumental just in my life, being able to, pull me into
to different rooms that I would not have been able to get in if it weren't for you. So, you know, I can attest to that, you know, just being around someone of your stature and knowledge, you know, is really, you know, took me up about 100 rungs that I may not have been able to go before. So thank you.
Well, you're certainly welcome, but I feel like I'm still in debt to you. So.
Well, let's call it even then.
Okay.
So let's jump a little bit into the banking sector. I wanted to ask you, like, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities you see facing community banks today compared to when you were CEO?
You know, probably a continuation of a lot of the same challenges with a few layered on top. You know, the regulatory environment is tough on community banks. There is a very high expectation by bank regulators, and there should be, that the bank will be run properly and run soundly and comply with all the rules and regulations. It is an extremely regulated industry, so that takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of resources in order to operate a bank in compliance, regardless of the size of the bank. But over the past year to 2 years, the rapid increase in interest rates just creates a lot of uncertainty, a lot of stress in the environment. A lot of banks had very large securities portfolios, and the increase in interest rates have caused a lot of their capital to erode through the interest rate marks of those securities. Yeah. That creates stress within the organization. It creates stress on borrowers, as they many have seen payments double, especially on the commercial side, where most of the loans are variable rate. But overall, through government stimulus and other programs, borrowers have been able to keep up. We'll just keep our fingers crossed that will continue so that we don't go into a significant down credit cycle.
Yeah. So I know, you know, when you look at banks like they're not a community bank, but you look at Silicon Valley Bank, right? And, you know, all of the chaos and everything, you know, that was happening with that, you know, what would you have done if you were in that kind of situation? What would you have done different?
So it's interesting. I had announced my retirement in February. And worked through the middle of April. And that was, if you recall, Silicon failing in March. That was a time when, while I wasn't CEO because our bank had already been acquired, I felt the need to send the CEO some ideas, some strategies on what I would have done. So I feel like I lived it, although I wasn't directly responsible for the bank.
Yeah.
So anytime something unexpectedly happens, now, a lot of people will say that, you know, Silicon Valley Bank should have seen this coming, and probably there were a lot of indicators, but it happened swiftly,
right.
And there's no denying that. And so Silicon Valley got caught in a liquidity crunch. And typically in banking, you think that the credit cycle is the greatest impact on the bank, and it is from an earnings standpoint, but a bank cannot operate without sound liquidity measures, meaning that if a customer decides to withdraw their money, that you have the money for them to withdraw. Go back to one of my favorite movies, and at this time of year, It's a Wonderful Life, when George Bailey is standing there, and there's a line of people in the building and loan wanting to withdraw their money, and he's trying to convince them that their money is not in the vault, it's been loaned out to someone. Silicon Valley, due to the high interest rate increases, securities portfolio had taken deep hits. It was very difficult for them to liquidate those securities and fund liquidity without eroding their capital. So it was just a perfect storm, and they were caught. So what I would have done, and what I advised the CEO of the first to do, was to guard liquidity. Exercise whatever measures it takes, either through offering higher rate deposits or through liquidation of securities to shore up liquidity, because you always want to battle from an offensive standpoint, not from a defensive standpoint. So be sure that there's plenty of ammunition, and that at that time was liquidity.
Yeah. So would you, and just piggybacking off of that, like during the downturn, you know, a few years back, you know, would you kind of, would you say these similar situations were kind of, were they kind of similar, like during the downturn and, you know, you see a bank like Silicon Valley Bank failing, you know, would you have your approach been the same is what I'm trying to say.
During the Great Recession?
Yeah, during the recession.
So in 2008, 2009, you could start to see the erosion of credit quality as the housing market began to devalue very quickly. And so as a CEO, you know, you gather the smartest people in the organization around you and you ask them their opinions on what's the best way to weather the storm. And in our case, we had an abundance of capital. And so banks that had an abundance of capital had two paths that they could take. Number one, force marginal borrowers into terrible situations and just liquidate collateral, or work with marginal borrowers and allow them to present you a plan and then work through the plan together. Yeah. It was our goal to help the marginal borrowers. We knew those folks. They had been customers for years and years and years, and many had been tremendously successful. And we knew, given time, that they would have been tremendously successful through the economic downturn as well.
Right.
And that was exactly what bankers tried to preach to the FDIC, the Federal Reserve, and all of the regulatory powers were, hey, let's just take a breath here. This will pass, and let's position ourselves to weather the storm and come out on the other end. Well, the banking regulators were under a tremendous amount of pressure, and they chose not to allow that to happen. That didn't mean that Heritage couldn't do that. We did. So we sat down with borrowers and said, okay, the landscape has changed. The playing field has changed. Tell us what the new plan is. How will we get through this together? And every one of those borrowers that had a viable plan, we worked that plan with them. Which allowed us to survive, and for most of them to survive as well.
Yeah. See, and that's such a big difference between a community bank, you know, and other banks that are out there. A lot of people don't understand when you're actually working with a community bank, we know each other. You know, I can come in and sit down with you and say, hey, Leonard, you know, this is what I'm going through. And like you said, just map out a plan on how it can be mutually beneficial for both people. So, you know, community banks are so critically important when especially from a small business standpoint, commercial standpoint, because it helps to really keep a lot of businesses alive. So thanks for explaining that. So, Leonard, I wanted to ask you, when you hear the word fintech, what does that bring to mind for you? And how can community banks, you know, best work with the fintech industry?
So when I think of fintech, I think of innovation. I think of flexibility. I think of the ability to move quickly, and so it's so much different than the banking community. The banking community tends to move slowly in a more methodical way. So fintech, to me, provides an opportunity for the banking community to be more innovative, to be more nimble, because it's not natural within a banker to think and to act as quickly as fintech companies do. So I think fintech companies are on the cutting edge, if not to use too old a term, and banking is wise to partner and to utilize fintech as much as possible to be innovative and provide them the future products and services.
Yeah. And I definitely agree with you. I also think, you know, there are some with fintech, a lot of fintech companies iterating and coming about every day. There's also going to be some challenges to vet those fintech companies as well, because, you know, when you're looking at APIs and you're looking at all of these different open banking platforms and banking as a service platforms, you really have to be careful as a community bank also, because, you know, I feel like, you know, there may be some security issues that we're not looking at right now, because the allure of fintech. So, you know, I know that's also going to be a balance or something that, you know, that's really, you're really going to have to pay attention to, when you're thinking about fintechs, because when you're dealing with a bank and, you know, you're bringing in technology and laying that on top of, you know, all of this data, you know, there, you definitely have to be, and I would say secure, and making sure that there are no loopholes or, you know, anything that could really jeopardize the data of the bank.
Yes, we go back to that regulatory compliance issue and how we share data, how we utilize data is very key in the regulatory compliance arena. So fintechs have to be able to provide assurance to the bank that they can protect data. And also, you know, fintech starts as an idea just like anything else. And then there is a process of trying to develop that idea. And for bankers, you know, we're out serving day in and day out of customers. So we tend to want that idea to be at a later stage, to almost be at a proven level before we wade into it, because our resources are limited. We work on very thin margins.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we don't want to miss opportunity either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a great balance. So Leonard, I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts around the uncertainty of the economy? And, you know, I know a lot of people are thinking, you know, are we going to go into a recession? What's going to happen next? You know, what are your thoughts on, you know, the economic status of today?
So I think the greatest thing that I hear from all of the pundits and the talking heads and the financial analysts and experts is that the debate is between whether there will be a soft landing or a shallow recession or none at all. Yeah. If you look back at 2008, 2009, when we had the deepest recession of my career, of my lifetime, you know, it's almost a relief to hear. But this particular period is very interesting because, you know, you have fiscal policy, which the Congress and the president control, and then you have monetary policy, which the Fed tries to control and balance that against unemployment. And typically, when the economy gets too hot and inflation starts to occur, the Fed raises interest rates. And you know, if you can imagine trying to steer an ocean liner with a 10-horsepower outboard motor, that's about what the Fed tries to do. The fiscal policy is the ocean liner, and the Fed's back here with this little 10-horsepower outboard motor trying to steer it with monetary policy. Right. So all the Fed has is very blunt instruments, and that's increasing interest rates or quantitative easing or tightening. And so the Fed has raised interest rates. In the past, that has always worked. Well, if you look at history, as the Fed raises interest rates, you typically see the unemployment rate going up because businesses have to find ways to cut costs in order to pay the higher debt costs. And right. So as businesses cut costs, they lay off employees, unemployment rate goes up. Well, this go around, the Fed has increased interest rates and the unemployment hasn't gone up. In fact, it's probably ticked down a little bit.
Yeah.
But it does appear as though the Fed is taming inflation. So it feels like the Fed has done the right thing, but you never really know until the job is finished. And I heard Jerome Powell's comments this week I heard the New York Fed's comment, Fed president's comments this morning, and they were somewhat contradictory. So I do believe that we should all watch unemployment. If unemployment starts to tick up, then that to me is an indicator of how deep a recession will be. The bond market still predicts a recession with the inverted yield curve. I'm in the camp that I do believe it'll be a recession. I'm in hopes that it'll be a mild recession. And I do feel like there will be interest rate cuts the second half of 2024. So to all of my friends out there in banking, stay the course. Continue to believe in your sound borrowers and continue to keep your ear close to the ground, because I think either if oil stays stable, all of my friends know I'm a oil hawk. I watch oil, and I believe that $75 is that benchmark level that is inflationary. So my hope is that the Fed has timed this right, that we will come through this okay. But typically we have to see higher unemployment before we see a recession. I mean, before we can say that the recession fears are gone.
Thank you for that insight, Leonard, because I know people like myself, may not actually be paying attention to the unemployment rate, and so that's a really good indicator for just the regular person to that's going to be watching and listening to this to really prepare themselves and be ready for anything that could happen. So I appreciate you sharing that insight.
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln, it's really simple. If we have full employment, which I think everyone would agree right now, with the number of job openings in our country, we are at full employment, then businesses that want to grow really have only two choices: to either expand their technology or to expand their human resources. And if you're trying to expand human resources in a period of full employment, what do you have to do? You have to pay a higher wage than the guy down the street in order to lure that employee away. And what does that do? That creates inflation, because that person now has more money to go out and spend. And if
That's right.
70% of our economy is based on the consumer, as long as people have jobs, as long as people have money in their pockets, they tend to spend it. And that is good for the country. That is good for the economy, but it is also inflationary.
So Leonard, and just wrapping this up, I wanted to, ask you one last final question, and that is, do you have any hidden talents that nobody knows about?
Well, that's a so I'm really good with fireworks, okay? I don't know when in my life I developed this affinity for fireworks, but I guess I could technically be a pyrotechnic geek. It's something that that people probably don't know about me, but come 4th of July, all my neighbors know of me. So
Oh,
it's just something I
so
enjoy.
you're the neighborhood fireworks guy.
I'm a fireworks guy.
Well, Leonard, I gained so much from this this conversation, and I hope others do as well, that they gain a lot from this conversation. I'm sure your phone is probably going to be ringing after this, people wanting to ask you some more questions. Again, I appreciate you coming on today and taking some time to share, all your valuable insight with me.
You're certainly welcome, Lincoln, and best of luck to you and your family, and Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and I hope a wonderful holiday season to everyone.
Absolutely. Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you, Lincoln.